Angelo Acerbi, Fred Film Radio. We are in Trieste at When East Meets West. And we're here with Katie Mustard, producer, and Antonio Tibaldi, director of The Oldest Man Alive, which was one of the projects that was pitched yesterday here at the festival. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Very, very good.
How was the pitching yesterday?
Oh, it was fun.
Really?
And nerve-wracking.
Oh, exactly.
Exhilarating afterwards.
Yeah, it was good. And the big advantage is you don't have to then re-pitch. Today we had 19 meetings. You don't have to repitch 19 times.
Yeah, lots of people have heard
maybe
it.
Only three times. Only three people were in there. So I think it's good enough.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Can you tell us briefly what the movie is about?
Yes.
Without spoiling it too much.
Don't worry. Yeah, sure. The Oldest Man Alive is a story of a 90-year-old man. It's set in New York, and it's the story of a 90-year-old man. He's a World War II vet. He's an inventor. He's a self-made man who bought a brownstone. A brownstone is a three-story house with a basement in New York. It's a property that today is valued about $8-9 million. He bought that slowly year after year, talking about 50 years, and with the revenue from his inventions. And his inventions are little, I don't know if you know those things, like the bedazzler or the smokeless ashtray, and they're things that he would manufacture in the basement of this house. Make a one-off and then find a company that would produce it in large scale, and he would make his own, then he would come up with an idea of how to sell this, make his own, design his own commercial, have somebody shoot them, and basically be himself selling them on late night TV in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in America. So it's based on a character, on a person that I really knew, who was called John Doyle, and out of that meeting with this person and befriending him, I came up with this idea of a story of a film. And in the story of the film, the 90-year-old man, now it's called Jack, and he has had a wife of 62 years. The wife has very recently passed away of a stroke, and he has retreated to the basement of his house, and he doesn't want to do anything. He doesn't really want to live. And one weekend when his son and daughter-in-law, who live in the upper stories of the brownstone, are off somewhere upstate New York for the weekend, he does get dressed and gets up and walks all the way to the Hudson River. We're in the winter in New York, and he lowers himself into the current, wanting to end his life. But there is a 29-year-old Romanian woman with her younger brother and boyfriend. They're having a smoke out there. And they see this guy trying to do something weird, dangerous, obviously, and they scream, yell. The guy doesn't seem to respond. The two men jump into the water and fish him out of the current. They bring him into the parlor of his brownstone. They put a fire on, put some music on, and enter this man's life. They've saved his life. The circumstances of the meeting between the old man and the 30-year-old woman are never disclosed to the son and daughter-in-law. And the conflict of the story is this growing relationship made of, with these very special circumstances between a 90-year-old man saved by a 29-year-old woman. And the concerns and worries that this relationship could have, as the implications that could come as a result of this implication of this relationship, in relation of a lot of things, not the last one, the inheritance of this house, who, you know, if things continue, if this relationship continues to progress, who knows what's going to happen? She's illegal. She doesn't seem to have her papers. Maybe she needs a green card. Maybe she would want to get married. What's this woman's agenda? To further complicate things, Jack's son, who's about 50 and has lived with his, wife for about 30 years, is, pretty attracted to the woman himself. Of course, he wouldn't want anybody to know, but this is going on and we see it, as it takes place. So it's very much a drama that is occurring inside of the confines of a home. And there's a few moments where the story goes out and it traveled, then the film at the end travels back to Romania with the female character. I'm not going to say what happens at the end, but ultimately, this is the territory of the film. Okay. There's a lot of humor in the film. There's a lot of ability of the characters to make fun of themselves and how they stand in the world. And that's the story in a nutshell.
And Sophie, which is the challenge for you as a producer on this movie? So If you feel challenged, what did attract it to you?
Sure. I mean, every movie, I think, is a challenge and a small miracle when they actually come together. So this one is interesting in that it's set in New York, but because Antonio's Italian, we are setting the film up as a European production. So we have an Italian producing partner. And because there's also a Romanian storyline and also a part of the shoot that actually happens in Romania, even though it's a small one, we're now doing a co-production with Romania. Mm-hmm. And then we're even bringing in a third country to do, you know, some of our post-production, maybe even another actor from possibly France, or we're entertaining Ireland. So I'm an American producer and film was set in New York, but it's really a European film. Thing. And that's, of course, a challenge, is always figuring out that strategy of how to do that. And people instantly are like, oh, but it's a U.S. film, there's no co-production. I said, no. We're just shooting there, you know. But also, I am bringing U.S. money and U.S. actors. And for me, this is actually the best, in the most exciting part as far as just the business side of thing, of just, you know, making basically an American independent feature film, but with the subsidies from Europe. Both, again, business and well as creative. I think the sentiment in the story and the way the look and the feel well.
And how easy it is for you as a producer to put all this money from different countries together? Is it easy?
It's not easy to put money together.
No, I mean, not. But I think in this case, with four different countries, it's even more complicated.
Yeah, even more complicated, I guess. But European producers do it all the time. If anything, it's a bit of a learning curve for me as far as just learning what all the funds are. When can you apply? How much can we get? You know, Francesca Bonsimbiante, our Italian producer, has been doing this for a long time. And so he is guiding us on, basically, his, you know, based on his experience, which countries we should go to, you know.
Actually,
and we have a finance plan that's broken down, that makes sense. And really, he's coming to me to oversee the production of the movie, as well as bringing in some equity and a tax credit from New York. And the pieces are coming together. And I think we're just working as a team to make that actually happen.
Because I think that it's much easier, absurdly, but it is much easier to fund a film in Europe than in the U.S.
It is. I think it is. And that's why I want to do more films in Europe, because, again, there's an application. You apply. You know how much you can possibly get. Whereas in the U.S., all independent films are just raised from rich investors, you know, rich people that, you know, you have to convince to give you their money. And that's sort of like a needle in a haystack as far as finding those people, convincing them to give you money. So I love this idea of putting a movie together that, again, is English language, set in New York, but with the support and help of the European system is fantastic.
Yeah. And which are your plans of shooting?
We're going to shoot September, October of this year. That's our plan, you know.
2015.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're pretty done. Basically.
Well, no.
We've thought about it a lot.
We have a lot of ideas and discussions and conversations, and finding these co-producers. Mm-hmm. Those conversations take months.
Yeah, I know.
Just sort of timing it. And
right. We have some casting. I mean, we've done a lot of work in many ways, but the road ahead is still there.
It's the execution that's going to start to have to happen.
Now we're going to make, you know, kind of try one specific road of putting it together financially and artistically and see what it means, and then try and execute it. And if that one doesn't seem to work, then we have a plan B, which is just a financial plan B. What we try and do is preserve the integrity of the story through the financing. A lot of, in my experience, there are cases where, you know, just to be able to make the movie, you make tragic compromises in content and nationalities.
Yeah, all of a sudden we're shooting
it has been done a lot in the past, I think we are experienced enough as a team, creatively and producively, to not want to go there.
Especially because the audience then would notice if it's just made.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, you do all this to make a good film. You don't do all this just to make a film so you can, you know, it's kind of a weird business to be in. It's not a business, it's an insanity, you know, and you're just trying to make the best possible film you want.
That's a good quote.
I really think it is, you know.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for being with us. Thanks a lot. And I hope to see you moving in the
And the theater is soon.
Yeah, some festival next year.
Yes.
So just to start.
Just to start.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
It was Angela Cherby for Fred Film Radio from When East Meets West.
Fred Film Radio. 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.